Hi, I'm David Moss. If your vehicle needs service, there's no better place than Moss Nissan. With our state-of-the-art service facilities and factory-trained technicians, we are more than equipped to service all make and model vehicles. Plus, with our extended service hours and our pickup and drop-off service, you can have your vehicle serviced according to your schedule, not ours. If you need a vehicle while yours is being serviced, we have plenty of Nissans available. Stop by and experience the Moss difference. Moss Nissan, whatever it takes.
Blog Talk Radio.
So it's going to be lively. You can bet on that. We will also have in this first segment from the Right Hook, FTRs, it's from the radio, from the radio's Right Hook, John Brodigan. Will be on to discuss legalizing mixed martial arts in New York. So we're going to talk to him about that in just a few moments. We're going to have a lot of fun on this show. It's going to be very lively, real exciting, and we're going to be looking for your phone calls. The number to call into the show is 323-657-0901. You know, go ahead, give us a call, let us know what's going on, ask your questions. We're really looking forward to hearing you. And before we get into all of that, we've got a big show lined up here, but I would be remiss if I started the show without first acknowledging we don't want to get too focused on what's happening in MMA without realizing there's a bigger world out there. And so I just want to say to the people of Japan, for those who have family in Japan, who are affected by the quake and the nuclear explosions, the volcano that just erupted within the last hour, prayers to those people or whatever you believe in. We hope for them to be able to get through this, and it's a rough patch over there, to say the least, over in Japan. So, we just hope for the best for them. All right? I needed to get that out of the way right in the beginning. Okay. So, I had initially planned to talk about a recent development in my life, kind of open the show. I always like to do my little opening spiel. And because there's a lot happening right now with MMA. We got an hour and a half to get through, and there's a lot to say. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. But in August, I had actually, I went to the doctor, and I was 336 pounds, and I'm about 5'6", 5'7", so I was really fat. In fact, for those of you who followed me on the Whiskey Rebellion and before that PC Live, I actually used to spend a lot of time discussing health concerns and diet and everything, and and I acknowledge the fact that I was not listening to any of the advice that I was putting on other people. I finally decided to do something about it, and the object was to lose 140 pounds in, over the next 6 months. And I did. It actually took me 7 months, but, who's counting? So I lost 140 pounds, and now I am finally under 200. And I was going to get into a whole big thing about that, but I had to throw the whole schedule for the show out the window because we have a guest, and we have a guest that I'm going to bring on before I bring out John. He's going to come up after this, okay? He's live and in our new Tampa studio, because I'm on location today, and he is the Huntington Beach Beach bad boy himself, Tito Ortiz. Tito, come on, why don't you come into the studio? Tito, watch the door. Tito, whoa, you're going to... Whoa, oh!
Ah! Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo!
Is he okay? Tito, you are... Oh, that's going to need stitches. Yeah, that's going to need stitches, Tito. You got to pull out of the interview? No, I understand. No, I know you wanted to do the interview. I get it. I got it. No, I understand. Okay. Another time. Yeah, maybe with Forrest Griffin. No, I agree. You take care of that, Tito. That's definitely going to need stitches. Okay. So we're going to throw that out the window. And we're going to just move right into the next segment here. Before I bring him out, as I said, I used to do a show called Progressive Conservatism Radio, which we then shortened to PC Live, kind of like CM Punk. And then that became the Whiskey Rebellion. John's my good friend from back in the day. He used to host the show with me. In fact, he did a lot of the technical stuff. And I'm really happy to have him here on the 411 Ground and Pound radio show. So without further ado, from the Right Radio's The Right Hook, Mr. Young Republican himself, John Brodigan.
Together again. Gee, it's good to be together again. I just can't imagine that you've ever been gone. It's not starting over, it's just going on.
Together again. Now we're here and there's no need remembering when.
'Cause no feeling feels like that feeling.
Together again.
Find the words.
Cheer. What was that?
I can't even find the words.
You knew when I told when I prepped you for the show yesterday, you were going to get a big intro.
I'll be honest with you. I was expecting Faith No More's cover of Reunited.
that just I don't like frozen. The repeat
well done,
gimmick.
Sir. Well done. Anytime I can be surprised by the Muppets on a Sunday morning, well done.
Wow, we already have a caller, and I'm not sure if it's somebody who wants to yell at me for the previous bit. Let me take this person really quick, and then we'll get into this, okay?
Okay.
347, you are on the air with the 401 Ground and Pound radio show. What's your name and where
are
you calling from? Yes.
My name is Jeff from Minnesota. I'm just doing a show here on Blog Talk Radio, me and Bill Clinton. Yeah, hey, my name is Bill Clinton, the 42nd president. How the hell are you guys doing today? We're hanging out here on Blog Talk Radio. We figured, guess what? We figured we'd call your show and see what's going on. How you boys doing today?
I think we're good. John, I think I know who this is. It's somebody who I work with on the site.
Okay.
My name is Jeff. I'm from Cowpoke Radio. I have no idea who you are, sir. I'm on Blog Talk Radio. I'm doing a show right now. I called your show.
Okay.
I'm doing Cowpoke Radio. Bill Clinton and friends. I have no idea who you are, sir.
Okay.
My name is Bill Clinton. I'm on Cowpoke Radio, and we're doing like a Bill Clinton friends speculation sports, having a good time. We figured we'd call your show and see what's going on. What's going on, boys?
Nothing much. We're actually going to do. Let me put you on hold for just a moment so we can get started with John.
Are you kidding me?
All right, John. Not sure what that was all about. So, why don't we get into the situation?
What have I told you? I'm not taking calls in the first place.
You know, I know you normally don't like to take calls, but I thought I knew who that person was. This is why you should always have a call screener.
Anyway, where were we? Or was I about to pull out of the interview because I got stitches?
No, that was Tito Ortiz.
Oh.
But all right.
I do have to say, as is obvious, you are a big pussy because you would never actually say that to his face.
No, I wouldn't say that to his face. I don't know how many times I have an opportunity to actually have Tito Ortiz in the same room to have that discussion with him, but whatever. So,
well,
you live in New York.
What do you think was more embarrassing, pulling out of the fight against Little Nug or pulling out of the fight against Dana White?
You know, at this point, the fact that he followed, I don't even think either one of those are as embarrassing as the fact that he followed it up with the Twitter war. It doesn't matter who was the Twitter war with or who started it. If you're over the age of 15 and you're in a Twitter war, it's embarrassing no matter what the context.
A Twitter war is kind of like winning a race in the Special Olympics. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Boo. Those people are handicapable. Now listen, you live in New York. You haven't escaped the tax prison that is New York, and you are actually an active, working young Republican.
I wouldn't quite call myself working, but continue.
we'll go with active.
So
you're not only a longtime mixed martial arts fan, but you're also active in the local politics. Can you sum up for people who may not understand what the issue is with why, with 40-some-odd states that currently have mixed martial arts legal and prospering in their state, what exactly has been the history of why mixed martial arts isn't legal in New York, and what's the holdup?
As far as I can tell, it's mainly a lot of holdover from, like, 1998, like, before the Zuffer bought the USC, back when it actually was legalized cockfighting. And a matter of the fact, even though, like, you know, we know the sports has grown, a lot of the older politicians in the state, which, let's be honest, older politicians is about 80% of Albany, which is the capital of New York. For those of you outside of, you know, New York, concrete jungle, what dreams are made of, there's nothing you can't do. A lot of it stems from that. I'm not exactly a good researcher, but I try to do some research. As far as I can tell, the only thing holding it up now is one single assemblyman from the upstate area, Assemblyman Bob Riley, who won't let it out of committee. It was originally, what's his face? I'll ask Governor Don Osel Simmons. He had it in his budget. But
you mean the wacky Pataki?
Yeah. No, not wacky Pataki. Governor Patterson.
Yeah, okay.
Actually had it in his budget, which never passed, just because, you know, everyone in Albany is, especially the Patterson and some of his cronies, were just incompetent. So the budget never passed. And as far as I can tell, there is one assemblyman holding it up who I believe he's even bragging about, like, it's something that he's proud of. Because on the record, he seems to think that, oh, it's barbaric and it's inhumane, and as a concerned New Yorker, you know, we can't allow this.
All right. What is the connection? My understanding of it now is, I at one point I thought the issue had been that there was a boxing lobby that was preventing the expansion of mixed martial arts because it was a direct competitor. That seems to have fallen by the wayside. I mean, mixed martial arts really has its beginnings as a promotion in Vegas, one of the biggest towns for boxing in the United States. So I'm not sure how much of that holds water. You had the John McCain kerfluffle where, you know, he was talking about it being human cockfighting and he didn't like it. But what seems to have evolved out of all of this is there isn't any single argument, good argument against mixed martial arts anymore, so much as there is a long-standing feud between a union and those and the Fertitta brothers who own Zuffa LLC. Can you speak to that?
Well, as far as boxing goes, I'm not even that sure boxing has much of a lobby anymore. And case in point would be Las Vegas. You have Las Vegas Senator Harry Reid, who, besides being a former boxer himself, is also the Senate Majority Leader in the U.S. Senate and has been Senate Majority Leader for, 6, 7 years now. probably more. I don't have the math in front of me. If anyone was going to lobby on behalf of the boxing industry, he'd probably be the guy to do that, and he'd be the most powerful guy to do that. Not only does he support the UFC, he's actually volunteered to help get them legalized in New York. So if
Harry Reid is helping to get mixed martial arts legal in New York.
He's done interviews where he's offered to help.
Wow.
So if Harry Reid, the former boxer, Nevada senator, House Majority Leader, I'm sorry, Senate Majority Leader, I should know that, Senate Majority Leader, isn't standing up for the boxing lobby, there is no boxing lobby.
Okay.
For the most part. The union thing, unfortunately, I don't have the name to the name in front of me. If you go to jumbrotting.com, I have a link in an article.
I want to say
United First. You have the name of the union?
Yeah, I believe it's like United First.
Okay.
Something along those lines. Here, go ahead, explain the situation. I'll pull that up.
I'm sure this is just ironic. It has nothing to do with controlling Bob Riley's decisions. Because as you and I both know, Democrats in New York are not bought and paid for by any labor union whatsoever. That's just a myth and a far right-wing conspiracy. You know, they think for themselves and they're not bought off by labor unions. But it just so happens that this particular union, who has donated a lot of money to Bob Riley, who's holding up mixed martial arts / the UFC for being legalized in New York, happened to be having an issue with the casinos that the Fertittas run in Las Vegas, which I'm sure is completely ironic, unrelated, but it is out there.
It's actually called it's the hotel union called Unite Here. And according to an article, hotel union Unite Here is engaged in an ongoing feud with the co-owners of the UFC in Station Casinos, which is also owned by the – which I want to explain that really quick for the people who – because this is also going to get into the whole Zuffa Strike Force thing. You have the Fertitta brothers who have a part ownership in Station Casinos, which is its own separate business. Then there's Zuffa, which owns multiple brands, one of which, and the main one essentially, is the UFC. So Zuffa is IBM, is Apple, is, you know, McDonald's, etc. And then underneath there are all these little small brands and businesses that they own. But you know, but if one is in trouble, it's not that they're all in trouble. And so in this particular case, the feud isn't even with the UFC; it's with Station Casinos.
Right.
Go ahead.
Who just happened to own the UFC also?
Yes.
You can't prove that the it's the union is he's the Assemblyman Riley is acting on behalf of the unions. Just like you can't prove that President Obama was acting on behalf of the teachers unions when he did away with the waiver program in Washington D.C., I'm sure it's just ironic because all this money goes to them. I'm sure it's just ironic that they're making decisions on behalf of them. But you know, some people say that the only reason that Assemblyman Riley is holding this up in holding up the MMA from being legal in New York is because of the donations he gets from this particular union. Some say that. I, like you, I try to be as fair of balance as I can. I have no proof of this, but I'm just, you know, it's out there.
Okay. So the UFC spent an inordinate amount of money and some time earlier this year, I believe it was, actively trying to lobby New York. They did a press conference.
That's actually part of the problem because I've spoken to people who are in that industry. Their lobbying apparently sucks.
Now, isn't that what Chuck Liddell was sort of brought into the office for? Once he retired, he was going to be part of the lobbying arm of the UFC brand, where he was going to try to work to get mixed martial arts sanctioned in unsanctioned areas.
Maybe. I know Chuck Liddell could usually barely string together two sentences, so I'm not sure how effective he'd be going with lobbying. I know in New York, Matt Serra's gone to Albany, Frankie Edgar's gone to Albany, Matt Hamill, another New York resident's gone to Albany. So, you know, there are other MMA fighters who have gone up there, but from what I've been hearing from my sources, their lobbying just sucks because if they had decent lobbying, it wouldn't be illegal.
Okay.
I mean, and they need to, you know, if the UFC wants to get this done, I mean, they need to find lobbyists who know how to deal with Albany. I mean, they need to look to companies like Gotham Management or other, like, you know, New York lobbying companies that will actually help them get the job done, because it, for whatever reason, they're not.
So to let me make sure I understand this. They attempted to lobby in New York, but they apparently don't know how to navigate the quagmire that is internal New York politics. Would that be the best way to describe it?
More or less. That's what I've been hearing.
Okay. So sticking with that, what do your sources tell you about Frank Shamrock's efforts? Because my understanding is that there's a parallel here. You have Frank Shamrock, whose main gig outside of announcing for Showtime is to lobby New York, almost specifically, and then you had the UFC's effort. Frank Shamrock, any better at this? Any chance that he's going to be more successful?
I don't think anyone knows what a Frank Shamrock is.
That doesn't tell me that he's doing very well with this, then.
Okay, this is the first I've heard of that, so yeah, I'm pretty sure most people don't even know what a Frank Shamrock is. And honestly, even if they recognize the name, you know, UFC's got such brand recognition. It's not even going to be like, oh, we're legalizing Miss Martial Arts. It's we're legalizing the UFC.
Right. I often have to find myself correcting people when they say, oh, you watch that Ultimate Fighting stuff, and I'm like, that's like saying, hey, you know, do you drink Coca-Cola? What you meant to ask me was, do you drink soda? Not, you know, it's Coke the brand. It's not the actual
entity.
So. Now that, and actually I want to string these two subjects together, but I don't want to stray too far from the MMA New York part. Now that Zuffa has bought the Strikeforce brand from the San Jose company that used to own it, and the San Jose Sharks, do you think that with that kind of synergy, Frank Shamrock will actually start to have some sort of an effect? Do you think that'll help matters with him, or do you stick with no one will still know what a Frank Shamrock is? And to that effect, what helps at this point? What moves the ball? What moves the chains forward?
Well, the main thing that moves two things move the chains forward, and no one's going to know what a Frank Shamrock is. I mean, you know, if you know, it'd be, you know, Anderson Silva, who could barely speak English, would have more of a chance of successfully lobbying New York, just because, you know, he's actually a champion that people have heard of.
Okay. Oh, poor Frank. He could have his brakes removed and everything.
You know, basically, you know, two things will move it forward. One would be basically if the UFC, you know, hires, like, you know, decent lobbying who can get the job done, or who are more familiar with the inner workings of New York politics.
To your knowledge, do you know if they're actually going ahead and doing that, or do you know if they're in talks with a New York based lobbying group?
Not that I've heard. I could suggest a couple to them, like Gotham Management, if they wanted, but. You know, I know Dana White's allegedly supposed to be in Albany this week. I don't know if he's bringing anyone or if he's just going to start knocking on doors himself. But
presumably he's there to get this effort going again. But do you know specifically what his agenda, what his stated agenda is?
Oh no, I mean, okay. The the entire news report is him tweeting, "I'm going to Albany this week."
Is he okay to the Pepsi Arena? Where's he going?
I would assume, well, by Albany he means the Capitol. But
okay.
The other thing that's going to help is could actually be Governor Andrew Cuomo, who's beginning to sound like he's going to be the best Republican governor we've ever had. I know that Zuf has donated, I think, $100,000 to his gubernatorial campaign. He's spoken out in favor of legalizing mixed martial arts, and he's actively looking for ways to bring revenue into the state without having to raise taxes. And when you look at the millions and millions and billions of dollars that the UFC could bring in, it seems like a perfect fit, especially when you've got Madison Square Garden. I forget the name of the arena, but there's a big arena in Buffalo. And you've also got Albany, three like main arenas where you'd have the UFC, plus all the mini shows that could take part during the state. Like, you know, there's Ring of Honor. No, Ring of Honor, I'm sorry. Ring of Honor is professional wrestling. The New Jersey-based company, Ring of Fire.
Right. Rage in the Cage, I think it is. Or Ring.
I think Rage in the Cage is something else. Okay, well,
I know what you're talking about.
New Jersey
it's something Ring.
Okay, there's a New Jersey.
it's the one Matt Weidman was in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, knowing what you're talking about, it's fantastic.
Research.
Yes, there is an independent mixed martial arts league in New Jersey that may or may not have the word ring in the title. That, if it's legal, if mixed martial arts starts to be legal in New York, they could actually, in theory, branch into New York also, open up more markets. And while, you know, obviously the UFC would be focusing on the Garden, focusing on Albany, and focusing on Buffalo.
It's Ring of Combat, by the way.
Ring of Combat.
Ring of
okay.
Combat.
A company of Ring of Combat could essentially come in and start having, like, you know, fights anywhere you could set up an octagon.
Right.
So, basically those two things, you know, lobbying and Governor Cuomo.
Okay, so is the budget passed at this point? I mean, are we now waiting for a new legislative session and a new budget to get this put back in, or are they still trying to hash out the budget? Because as I understood it, the problem was when Dana White threw up his hands was there was no plans to include legalizing mixed martial arts in the budget this time around after their failed lobbying effort. So
they're
speak
still,
to that.
From what I've been reading, and as far as the budget goes, I have not been paying that close attention. Apparently, they're still working on it.
Okay.
On
so there's
the
still a chance there's still a chance they can get this thing into the budget.
Yes, I have not heard anything about the U.S. Legalizing mixed martial arts being taken out or put in or anything other than indifference whatsoever. But yes, it is in theory that before the budget passes, it can get put in.
Your personal opinion: does this happen before the end of 2011? You know, in light of all the changes that are taking place, rapid fire in mixed martial arts, do you think by the end of 2011 we will see either a card on the books or, you know, or announced for 2012?
Legalized by the end of the year, probably not a card to 2012.
Okay, and do you think they'll debut in Madison Square Garden, which is not...
They'll debut in Madison Square Garden.
I'm asking for a specific reason. I mean, the Buffalo Football Stadium... you know, is huge. There's a couple of larger venues in the state of New York. We're talking, I mean, people think New York, they tend to think New York City, but there's the entire New York State, and
so
go back to,
there's a couple larger football fields, but two things. One, Dana's not sold on stadiums yet. I mean, we're still waiting to find out what happens in, I think it's UFC 130 in Toronto. And the other thing is, even though they're bigger, none of those places are Madison Square Garden.
Do you think it's a prestige thing? You know,
it's a prestige thing. It's a total prestige thing of being able to say, the UFC debuting at Madison Square Garden. You know, the UFC debuting at the place where at the arena where they had the first Ali Frazier fight.
Oh, and that sold itself right there. I'm going to ask you a fun question here, and then I'll set you up to promote your show. You find out tomorrow that not only is the UFC debuting in Madison Square Garden, but you have been named a fight promoter for that particular event. Main event, 3 undercard matches. Which would you put on that show?
Okay, well, the main event would obviously be the GSP versus Anderson Silva fight.
Okay.
That much is a given. I would definitely have a Frankie Edgar. Well, actually it depends. It depends on how John Jones does against Shogun. Yeah. If John Jones wins the title, obviously he'd be defending the title at the Garden. He's a New York resident. If there's a rematch, it would be that. I definitely try to have Frankie Edgar on the card. Oh God! And when you have like literally 800 other MMA fighters to choose from.
Do you try to get all New York guys on there? I mean, do you try to get a Chris Weidman and a Matt Serra?
I mean, not all New York guys. I mean, I would definitely try and get one of the Sarah guys. I know they have, again, because I don't prepare for my interviews, the new middleweight that just debuted on the last Versus
Chris,
show.
Chris Weidman.
Chris Weidman. I would have him fight. But, and Look. I mean, when they go to Australia, when they go to other countries, they try and get some of the local talent. Obviously, the main event. I mean, Anderson Silva versus GSP. Neither of them are New Yorkers, but also, you know, it also depends on the fights available. Yeah, I would honestly try to get as many like New York, New Jersey fighters, if they're name fighters, like, you know, Matt Serra, Frankie Edgar, John Jones. I would try and get as many of them on the show as possible. I mean, speaking of John Jones, and this is the perfect example about why, you know, it'd be nice if it was legal in New York. And I actually wrote about this on my blog, johnbrodigan.com, plug. the entire Shogun versus John Jones story storyline, it's basically right out of Rocky. Total underdog getting a surprise title shot against one of the best without a lot of like warning and training, which in Rocky took place in Philadelphia, where you would have to imagine, if you did a financial analyst of the area, you know, hometown boy, chance of a lifetime in Philadelphia, all the local, you know, everyone from Philly's going down there, they're buying tickets, they're going to the closed circuit, they're buying the program, they're buying the merchandise, it's affecting all the local businesses around the area. And if John Jones, who's a Rochester native, was able to have the chance of a lifetime main eventing in Madison Square Garden, everything that goes behind that, instead, all that revenue is going across the river to New Jersey.
Right.
Which, if all his friends and family from Rochester are going to drive to Madison Square Garden, they could drive an extra hour to go to, like, the Newark Center.
That's what I'm going to say. I think if you do a John Jones fight, they're now talking about him and Rashad Evans, and Rashad Evans is, I believe, from the Boogie Down Bronx. There's a fight.
Actually, Niagara Falls.
Niagara Falls. So there you go.
Yeah.
So I think John, you know, there's a good place to do a John Jones Rashad Evans fight. Okay. So what do you have now? Again, I couldn't let you leave the show without plugging your own show, The Right Hook, which can be heard on Blog Talk Radio and from The Right Radio. Want to tell us?
We don't really like, plug the Blog Talk Radio that much, just because they don't do anything for us. But
okay.
other than give us headaches with technical problems, but Thursday night, FTRradio.com, 8 o'clock, The Right Hook. We're hoping to have Assemblyman Dean Murray from Suffolk County, who's actually one of the assemblymen who's fighting to have mixed martial arts legalized in New York.
So any chance of getting him in the cage against Bob Riley?
That'd be awesome.
I'm sorry, please go ahead.
That'd be awesome. But we hope to have him on this Thursday night, 8 o'clock, FTRradio.com. And yeah.
All right, John. Well, thank you for... Well, but before I let you go, one last thing. So you and I talked a little bit yesterday, just talking about this interview and getting it ready and whatever, and in the midst of all that, we hear the big bombshell, Zuffa buys Strikeforce, which we will be talking about in the next segment if you want to give us a call, 323. And this time, if anybody from another show wants to call and do comedy on my show, now's your chance, now that I'm done with my interview, 323-657-0901.
Yeah.
Talk for the horse here. So we talked about it yesterday. When you first, I want to go back to a question I'd asked you before, but a little bit more broad. Do you think that Zuffa buying Strikeforce ultimately will lead, has anything to do with, you know, the continued legality of MMA in all 50 states? Do you think that they're, you know, yes, they could have something to do with each other, but they're just two different issues. I mean, do you think it helps at all, or it doesn't really make a difference?
No, I think they bought Strikeforce just because they could.
No, I realize that, but I mean, do you think that now they have it, that it'll help their prestige at all? Or
not
you,
really.
You know,
I mean, who does Strikeforce even have that people care about that much? On top of which, they haven't really branched out that far from California.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I mean, this is a jewel in the crown, but it has nothing to do with. But it won't help them in their efforts to make mixed martial arts sanctioned everywhere.
Not yet, no.
What do you think of it, just in general? You and I were there when WWE bought WCW. Where does this rank? You know, bigger earthquake, lesser earthquake?
A bigger earthquake, because, I mean, you know, WWE buying WCW, that was number one buying the close number two. That was a 10-year history. This is UFC buying another farm league, the same way they bought the WEC. The same way they bought, I believe it was called WLW back in the day. You know, this is them just buying someone because they could.
Okay. Do you think after the Showtime contracts end, they'll end up just folding out, just getting rid of Strikeforce altogether and folding it in, or do you think they'll keep it as its own brand?
I would like to say they'll keep it as its own brand, but they were also supposed to keep Pride as their own brand, and they were also going to keep WEC as their own brand. Give it at least a year.
Well, the Showtime television contracts are for 2 years, so I think we've got at least the minimum 2 years of Strikeforce ahead of us.
Yeah, at least for 2 years.
John, it's been great having you on the show. I'm glad you enjoyed your Muppets.
I did enjoy my Muppets.
And I'll be sure to tune into your show, From the Right Radio to the Right Hook, 8 o'clock on Thursday nights. Thanks for calling in, John.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. Okay, so that was John Brodigan from the Right Hook to talk to us about MMA in New York. And if you want to call into the show, it's 323-657-0901. So let's transition now. And any moment, we should have Scott Jakowski and Samer Cotty calling into the show to talk about the big news in MMA this week. It happened yesterday. Ariel Helwani broke the news on AOL Fanhouse's MMAfighting.com. Zuffa buys Strikeforce. And here's the summary.
Shocking news coming out of Las Vegas on Saturday as Zuffa LLC, the parent company of the UFC, has purchased the San Jose, California-based Strikeforce MMA organization. UFC President Dana White confirmed the news about the historic merger with MMA Fighting's Ariel Helwani. White stated in the interview that it is business as usual, with no present plans to merge the two organizations nor switch any fighters from either brand until contracts become due. White also confirmed that all existing contracts, including their television deal with Showtime, will be honored, with Strikeforce running just as it currently has been, including Showtime controlling the production of Strikeforce events on their network, something UFC has never relinquished in their own television deals. The company has also hired Strikeforce CEO Scott Coker, who will continue running the fight organization with the same responsibilities as before. Strikeforce will move forward with their next Challengers event at the start of April, and then hold their next major Showtime card April the 9th to be headlined by Nick Diaz versus Paul Daly, along with their heavyweight Grand Prix tournament that continues this June in Dallas, Texas.
So there it is in a nutshell. Zuffa, I want to break this down for people because yesterday when it was announced on 401mania.com in the MMA zone, there were 60-some-odd comments regarding this, plus hosts of other comments in other articles on other sites that ranged from, we hope Fedor goes on a rampage and kills Dana White, to, damn you, Scott Coker, and, oy, the tension regarding this particular issue is palpable. We have Paul Daly throwing himself an internet tantrum saying, I don't want to fight for Dana White. And then, you know, there's articles now out about does this or does this not affect M1 Global, who will be debuting on Showtime. Seems to be a lot of anger, a lot of frustration, a lot of confusion. And I want to just break that down and try to look at this from the business perspective, how things work. So, real quick, when we posted the news, this was, I'm going to go through what we put on 411mania.com. So they said it was a good deal. Obviously, this is Dana White talking to Ariel Helwani, and here was the crux of it, that Strikeforce is going to continue to run business as usual, White said. There's contracts in place. These guys are on Showtime. Strikeforce pulls good ratings for Showtime. I think Showtime is happy with them. All those contracts will be honored. These guys are going to remain Strikeforce fighters. Could guys from the UFC leave and end up over in Strikeforce? Yeah. He also went on to say, we're not going to do super fights. He said, no cross-promotion. We don't even, so they don't cross-promote anything. If the UFC does it, it's the UFC alone. They're not going to be doing a UFC versus Strikeforce kind of a thing. The exact quote was, White ruled out the possibility of cross-promotion superfight, saying, fighter contracts, broadcast deals, and business partnerships will remain unaffected. And the first thing people jumped to was the comparisons to Pride. Let me go back a step. And again, if you want to call in now and talk about how you feel about the whole Strikeforce situation, you can give us a call at 323-657-0901. First of all, the UFC isn't the big daddy in all this. It's a brand. It's a big brand. People are comparing it to, I compared it to the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, NASCAR. But even at that, these may be the major brands of their respective sports, but they are, in fact, brands. And a company can own many brands. Let's take a look at Coca-Cola, right? There's the company that owns Coca-Cola, but they also own Sprite. They own, I don't know the other sodas that are under it, but there's various brands. And each brand can have, can be incorporated into one contract with all the other brands, or they could have their own separate contracts. As I understand this, Zuffa, which again is the overall corporate entity, Zuffa LLC, purchased the brand Strikeforce from, I believe it's San Jose Sports Promotion. I don't remember the total name of the company. But it's the company that owns, again, the brand San Jose Sharks and runs the HP Pavilion that the San Jose Sharks play out of. So they bought that from them. That brand itself has television contracts that I believe run for 2 years with Showtime, which is a part of Viacom. So what Dana White is essentially saying here is that so long as they have this television contract, which from what I understand, and we've talked about this in the past on the 401 Ground and Pound radio show, the Showtime actually has a say in how Strikeforce runs its business. People have complained about, for example, Mauro Ranallo broadcasting on Showtime shows. And they say they don't like him, he's annoying, blah, blah, blah. And the response back to that is, well, he's kind of a Showtime guy. So Showtime, for their part, does the production for the shows. And they like Mauro Ranallo say. Same thing with Gus Johnson. That being said, and I think there's a recognition of that. So unless contracts start getting undone, and typically, can it happen? Sure. But let's assume sanity for a moment and that all the contracts stay the same and are played out as they are. They have a 2-year television deal with Showtime via Viacom, which says they do X amount of shows on Showtime per year with an option to do a show or shows on CBS. Again, another Viacom brand. So if you're Dana White, and this is the point that I was getting to, if you're Dana White, and there's this big fear among fans that, like, tomorrow, you're going to see this whole rapid change for Strikeforce. They have a 2-year television deal. And if you're the UFC, you had to see Lorenzo Fertitta on Fighting Words with Mike Straka, which airs on HDNet. One of the things that he said over and over and over again in that half-an-hour interview is that their model for the UFC brand is to sell pay-per-view. They are strictly a pay-per-view brand. Okay, that is their market. That is their revenue plan, to sell pay-per-view. Everything goes, if they want to get on a cable deal, the cable shows set up to get you to buy the pay-per-views. Everything works to sell the pay-per-views. He says their marketing and their promo people, they work to sell the pay-per-views. That is their model. Do they want to do other things, like get on a broadcast subscription service like HBO, which they tried, or Showtime? Sure. But right now, their model is strictly pay-per-view with some cable outlets. So if you're Zuffa and you're trying to expand into another model, which makes more sense to you? Do you start something from the ground up? Do you try to expand? Do you try to reconfigure what was already a working model? Or do you buy an already set up model? Because Showtime, because the Strikeforce model was completely different. Their model wasn't to sell pay-per-views. I mean, there was talk about it. There was talk that if they signed Dave Bautista, they were going to try to get on pay-per-view or maybe do the last heavyweight Grand Prix show on a pay-per-view. But their model was essentially to work with Showtime to sell Showtime subscriptions. So, again, if you're Zuffa and you're interested in a subscription deal, it's probably a lot easier and a lot cheaper to go buy a brand that already has an established television subscription deal, like with Showtime, and let that be that business. So you have one brand doing one kind of business and another brand doing another kind of business. Now, immediately the comparisons start coming about to the WEC, right? World Extreme Cage Fighting, which started out as a Dome brand. Now, to my recollection, I don't believe the WEC had much in the way of a television deal that was either altogether different or superior to what the UFC already had. In addition to which, as I recall, I think initially they had heavier weight classes than the three that it ended with, but ultimately, from the way I understand that deal, they initially allowed the WEC to continue with whatever television deal it had and to do pay-per-views, et cetera. But what they ended up doing was they said, okay, we're going to have these weight classes in the UFC, the heavier weight classes, and they set up the WEC as the lighter weight brand, which continued to exist until there is a need for more fighters, which goes to something Dana White said in the interview, which is, what was the stated purpose of this sale? It hasn't been talked about yet, but the real stated purpose of this was to get a hold of the video library. But aside from that, part of this deal was essentially to set them up to have more fighters so that they could do more shows. But how you put those shows out is a whole other conversation. So going back to the WEC, you have the UFC doing one kind of service, one content, and then you have the WEC set up as the lighter brand content. And when the time came that they could incorporate the two, they didn't. So I understand where that comparison comes from, but it's still different. It's still, they set up one business to do one kind of content until there was no need to have them separate anymore. Because again, their television deal wasn't, they were doing the same kinds of things. They were doing occasional pay-per-views. They had shows on a cable show. So there was no difference really. And when they needed more fighters and more weight classes, that made sense. Strikeforce, the only difference between them content-wise is they have women. But they've got a heavyweight division, they've got a light heavyweight division, they've got middleweights, they've got lightweights. And they don't have anything even less than lightweights unless you count some of the undercard guys that don't make television. So those are the two, the four main weight classes. So think of it this way. What purpose would it serve for the UFC to cannibalize Strikeforce at this point? Even if the tomorrow morning Showtime said, we want to start, you know, now that you've bought Strikeforce, we're not interested in airing that brand anymore. We want UFC shows on Showtime. Now they are faced with, yeah, they have all these fighters, but as people have written about the UFC, they've already got kind of a bloated roster. They need the ability to do independent fights. What they don't necessarily need are a buttload of new fighters. You know, the handful that Strikeforce had that are in the top, you know, your Nick Diaz's, your Alistair Overeem's, Fedor even, that's one thing. But overall, what the U.S. what Zuffa needs is a brand that can act independently, that has been acting independently, to go and do the subscription part of their business, as opposed to the pay-per-view generating part of their business. That said, what's in this for Strikeforce? You know, what kind of changes do you think? You know, people were like, oh, well, I bet you're going to see the Gladiator intro for the April 9th show. I don't think that's what you're going to see. The only change that's going to happen is at the end of it, you're going to see the Zuffa LLC at, you know, in the credits, like you always see. But ultimately, the big change that's coming, and I don't understand why people aren't more excited about this, because to me, this is the big deal. This is what it's all about. We had said 2 weeks ago on the 411 Ground and Pound show that the biggest problem Strikeforce has is setting up their events. I kept calling it logistics, but it's planning. The ability to plan 4 and 5 months out what events you're going to do, when you're going to do those events, and where you're going to do them. You know, the interesting thing about running a promotion, you know, strangely enough, is it almost doesn't matter which fighters you have. Because you can really take anybody, and with the right amount of marketing and promotion, you can make just about anybody a star. So the fighting, you know, who the fighters are and what, you know, where they're going to fight or whatever is almost not as important as where you're going to fight. As we can see with what happened with the April 9th card, I mean, a great example of this, they really put the cart before the horse in announcing where they were going to do the second leg of the heavyweight Grand Prix without knowing where they were going to do it or without having that locked in, because I think they had wanted to do it in Japan and, you know, look what happened. And this was even before the earthquake. That deal fell apart. They were talking about Texas and Georgia, but they should have had that locked in. When a company like Zuffa, because I've actually been doing some research on this since this broke, I've been talking to people, some of the people that I know that are in the business world, and essentially what happens is, for example, like in the clothing industry, you had Izod, which was a company that was failing. You know, Izod with a little crocodile on the in the breast pocket. That was a brand that was failing. And I believe, I can't remember the name of the company, maybe it was Van Hoosen, that bought Izod. And they bought Izod because they felt like the brand itself wasn't a failure of a brand so much as it was just being run badly. And this happens all the time in the business world, is you have the big businesses buying little businesses because they feel like they can make money on them. They serve a purpose. There's other lines of business that they can get into to build revenue. But ultimately, they look for companies that are not doing particularly well, you know, or that they can get on the cheap and turn it around and make some money on it, maybe even sell it off again. This also happens all the time. I mean, people, you know, there's always the possibility the UFC turns around and sells Strikeforce. I don't know if that's going to happen. I wouldn't put money on it. But it happens in the business world, so I'm throwing that out there as a possibility. So Zuffa buys Strikeforce ostensibly because they recognize that it's a brand that's currently doing business it wants to do. It eliminates a competitor for the marketplace while simultaneously expanding their, you know, their own share of the market. But it also sets them up in as a way to parent this company. It sets them up to be able to run Strikeforce better than it's been run to this point. Again, what has been the big complaint about Strikeforce? Because it hasn't been the fights. It's not the content. It's not that, you know, you have your, and I hate to use this term, but it's become popular on the board, so I'll bend and use it. You've got the UFC, quote-unquote, nut huggers who complain and, you know, and say, oh, well, you know, Alistair Overeem is overhyped, and Fedor is overhyped, and who the hell is Gilbert Melendez, and Nick Diaz is a small is a big fish in a small pond, and you know, who's Jacare, and you know, so it's, you know, the strike force, the not yet ready for prime time players. That's not the issue, and while you have a small segment of the MMA population that feels that way, I think most people overall recognize that the guys in Strikeforce are as talented and sometimes more talented than anyone fighting in the UFC. Just no one knows who the hell they are because they're the smaller promotion. And that's where Zuffa comes in. Because Zuffa isn't sending people from the UFC necessarily to run Strikeforce. They're sending people from Zuffa over there to help run Strikeforce. And what are they going to be doing? Booking venues well in advance. Getting with Showtime to make... Thank you, Jack. Getting with Showtime to make sure they know what the calendar is. You know, Scott Coker had said something about not running an event in May because, you know, Showtime's got a very busy boxing schedule. Okay. You get a company that you get a company that deals in this sort of thing a lot more professionally, a lot better. You're gonna have events, you know, 1 to 3, even in a time where your television network is still busy, whether it be on a Friday night or a Thursday night or whatever the case may be. This is something that they work out well in advance, which is something Strikeforce just wasn't doing. So it brings more competent, aggressive executives to the table to run a promotion that desperately needs it. This is a win. This is a win, people. No more do we sit at home wondering, you know, hearing them say things like, hey, the next event's going to be April 9th, but we don't know where, which is ridiculous, and everybody knows it. There's no need to get all, you know, oh my God, this is the end of MMA as we know it. And let's talk about that for a second. Again, if you want to call in, if you disagree with what I'm saying, if you have a different opinion, if you're worried that, you know, that this is going to have a negative effect on MMA, give me a call, 323-657-0901, and I'll take your call right away. But this whole idea of they're creating a monopoly. Okay, first of all, that word gets thrown around way too much. Your monopoly is where you don't allow other competitors into the marketplace. No one's blocking Titan Fighting Championships from doing a show. They're, you know, and while they be me small fry, they got a television deal. They've got some pretty big name fighters. In fact, their next show is the 25th? No, the 17th of March on HDNet. You've got the Maximum Fighting Championships. You've got Shark Fights. You've got Art of Combat here in Florida. Are these huge? No. And then, of course, you've got Bellator. Again, not huge, but they've got a television deal, too, on MTV2. And they run 2 seasons, I believe, a year. So there are, and I just listed 4 pro MMA companies, brands, that currently have television deals. Granted, 3 of them have the same one. And who knows where they're going to go from here on in. Maybe Bellator evolves into the number two competitor with the UFC. We don't know. Maybe they don't. There's a company, I believe Pro Elite, that was in the market to buy Strikeforce. Well, now they're trying to put together some venture capitalists to go and start a new promotion. Maybe they buy one of the ones that's already out there. Maybe they buy MFC or Shark Fights or Titan Fighting. Maybe they buy something that's, you know, altogether new. You know, someone that's amateur or that's very, very regional with no television deal. Maybe they buy, you know, Art of Combat from here in Florida. And they start to go national. The UFC isn't stopping any of that. People think that, like, if you buy smaller companies, suddenly you're this great evil being, you know. I was going to do this bit when Scott and Samer came on, but I'm not sure where they're at. But, I mean, this is the impression that I get of people when they read this, when they read the article and they saw that, UFC, that the Zuffa had bought Strikeforce. And I swear to God, this was the collective response.
Three rings for the elven kings under the sky, seven for the dwarf lords in their halls of stone, nine for mortal men doomed to die, one for the dark lord on his dark throne in the land of Mordor where the shadows lie. One ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them in the land of Mordor where the shadows lie.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's essentially what people now are starting to refer to the UFC and Zuffa as, one ring to rule them all. All right, I have been going on and on here, and I am finally joined by the author of A View from the Cheap Seats. He is the one and only Scott Kachowski.
Wow, walkout music.
Back in the old
days
when I was doing... What was that?
That's a lot to live up to.
Yeah, I expect you to, when you come on the show, jump up onto a chair.
I already did that.
I'm
getting strange looks from the family. They're all like, why are you standing on the table? So.
Apparently
they haven't
point...
noticed. I'm just wearing black underwear now, so...
There was a time when I first started doing radio where I swear to God at least half the show was sound bits and literally walk on music. I would have four or five of my friends call into the show, all had walk on music.
You know, it's funny. I listen a lot to Sirius Satellite Radio, and there's a lot of shows out there that a good percentage of their entire airtime is sound bits and little gags, and I mean that's good and all, but I think it, you know, it's one of those things that there is such a thing as too much. Too much of a good thing. So it sounds
indeed.
Like sounds like we're talking about is there a piece of news that's gone on? Is there something that happened this weekend that maybe nobody knows about?
Yes, Akiyama. Akiyama's out of the next UFC event he was fighting in. I believe that's the news you're referring to. Wait,
yeah.
That might not be it.
That seems fairly responsible. I'm sure the UFC probably saw that coming, given the... tsunami action that occurred over in Japan. So, yeah, okay, that is big news. That is tremendously big news.
I do have another piece of big news, and I think I know what you're talking about. Sengoku loses major sponsor, future looks grim. So it looks like Sengoku's going out of business, and I think that's the news you're referring to.
I'm actually kind of funny that Future and Sengoku were spoken in the same sentence. I wasn't sure that those things still could still be used in the same conversation together. What was the major sponsor that they lost? Was it Toyo Tires?
Don Quixote.
Hmm. Okay. Well, see, then that makes sense. And that is unfortunate that I read that article, and that is unfortunate that that's just going to be yet another organization, another little piece of Japanese MMA that is going to fall by the wayside. And the unfortunate reality is we're probably going to expect – it wouldn't surprise me to see something happen with Dream.
If I were to put money on this, I would say that – because from what my sources tell me, and I don't know if you've heard this or not, but Zuffa appears to be in a buying mood. I think they're looking for content. They're looking for content providers, as they're called. And so videotape libraries, VTR, and I think FEG and company that owns Son Goku might have some tape to sell.
Well, if I was the UFC, and, you know, I am certainly not, but if I was Dana White, I would probably want to go for – I'd go for a really ballsy move. You know, why buy a tape library when you could just buy an entire library of fighters? So I would probably purchase Strikeforce. That's just me. I mean, it's strange. Probably never going to happen, okay? But that would probably be – if I had Dana White's ear, I would push him towards that. I would just say, yeah, just go buy Strikeforce. And then,
you know,
but claim that it's just going to be business as usual.
Well, I think breaking news on the Twitter is the Dunn bought Strikeforce.
That's crazy, isn't it? I read that yesterday, and I was actually shocked by the amount of people that seemed rather dismayed at that. You know, they think that this is, you know, it's tantamount to Microsoft, you know, being the only major leading operating system, you know. And I think people are they're worried that they're somehow now figuring that there's going to be a plight for the fighters, that, you know, Zuffa will be the only show in town. And, you know, really, for the people that worry about that, I would say, look at professional boxing right now. And that is what happens when you have fractured promotions all vying for the same piece of the pie, and none of them are able to work together. You know, you have champions on champions that...
I was actually going to use the NFL as a really good example of, let's not cry for the fighters just yet.
Yeah, well, and the NFL would be another, you know, if you wanted to look back at before, you know, the NFL, you know, merged under one big, you know, under the National Football League, you know. I don't know. I think right now, reading some of the comments online, you know, there's people that have, you know, called, you know, they're calling you Zuffa Microsoft, and of course, Dana White is still Satan, which is fine. But when you listen to his interview with Ariel Helwani, if, you know, and granted, Dana White is always free to change his mind, and, you know, I'm certain what news he put out was most likely well-crafted. If you take it at face value, it really sounds like things on Strikeforce, you know, should be looking up. You know,
yeah.
they're, because we've had fighters that, you know, Tim Kennedy was one of them who spoke that he'd like to fight more. You know, there's guys out there, really good, talented fighters that aren't getting the fights that, you know, they want. Well, you know what? If with a little bit more direction, with a little bit, you know, maybe a larger budget, because, you know, according to Dana, you know, Strikeforce will have their own budget that, you know, Scott Corkle will be in charge of, and, you know, everything's going to be in place. Maybe they will get pushed into those international venues. Maybe they will get pushed to put on more shows. That, you know, and plus they will have the UFC's marketing machine by them, you know, that at the next UFC event, he said, you will see advertisements for the next Strikeforce event.
Right.
There's not a lot of downside to that.
And that was my contention. I don't know how much of my discussion on this that you were able to get before you came on, but my contention with this was, for the next 2 years, I don't think you're going to see anything change except for Strikeforce to get bigger, because they're finally going to have competent executives running the show. But everything as far as content and production is probably staying the same, because the contract, within the contract, you have certain, Showtime has certain controls over the production. Not
right.
So what, and the other part of this was, this gives them the ability to have an independent brand doing a cable subscription service business without them having to actively control it.
Exactly.
I mean, that's win-win.
And they're also on network. They also have a network TV deal now that they didn't have to go out and cultivate.
Right. Right. I mean, like I said, do you buy a business that may be not doing so great, but at least is there and established, and there's already contracts on the books, or do you just build something up from the ground? I mean, if they had decided that they wanted to get back into the subscription cable service business, would it have made any sense for them to try to compete directly for Showtime, or again try to get back on HBO with a brand new venture, or did it just make more sense to just buy the one that was already there in the first place? To me, the latter makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I honestly think, you know, the only issue I have with what you just said is I disagree with the thought that Strikeforce isn't doing that well. They are pulling in very good numbers, and, you know, I tend to look at I think the guys, I think Zuffa, you know, I think the Fertittas and Dana White, I think they're pretty crafty. You know, history has shown that they, you know, there hasn't been a lot of busts that they, you know, there haven't been a lot of foolish steps that they've taken. So I don't think this was a knee-jerk, you know, hey, we need to buy these guys out, you know, for, you know, I don't think it was just a weekend decision. I'm pretty certain that they probably went through this deal with a fine-tooth comb and said, you know what, you know, in 2 years, in 4 years, in 10 years, this is how much more money this is going to make us. And it's actually, if it plays out for the next 2 years like Dana White laid it out, you know, if he can be taken at his word, I don't think people are really even going
to
notice a difference.
I want
outside
to share with
probably
you
some more advertising.
Yeah, when I see that they're not doing well, I'm not talking about financially. I don't know what their financial numbers are. I wouldn't speak to that. When I say not doing well, I mean they embarrass themselves kind of on a regular basis. We've covered that pretty extensively. I've said it today. That's what I'm referring to when I say here's a company that it's one step forward, two steps back. And if two guys on an internet blog can come up with this, everybody else I'm sure knows. So that you know, so that's what I'm talking about there. But the other, just reading through the reports on this, and where some people have more access to inside sources than others, I think the company that owns the Sharks and Strikeforce was really just looking to dump the brand to begin with. I think they were looking for a way out for whatever the reasons are. You know, was that led financially, or was it, you know, or was that led by they just didn't want to deal with this anymore? I don't know. But that seems to, you know, that seems to be where this was coming from. And I remember when AOL merged with Time Warner, it was kind of the same thing. It was we just spent all this capital doing this merger. We need to create more liquid, so we're going to dump these brands. And one of those brands was obviously WCW, but another one was the Braves, et cetera. You know, so they were dumping a lot of their sports brands. And it was a matter of let's put out offers to people and see if anyone's interested in picking up these brands. But I wanted to share with you really quick and just get your reaction. These are two of the responses to I read the comments too, and some of them, I'm reading them to my wife, going, I don't understand why we bother to put news on this site because no one reads it. They see the headline and apparently just react emotionally.
Oh yeah, well you could tell people by their comments didn't bother watching Ariel Helwani's video with Dana White.
No, I'm pretty certain they got as far as UFC by Strikeforce, and I don't think they saw anything after that except red. But this was Bjorn Rebney's, who runs Bellator. This was his response. He was asked by MMA Junkie if he saw any scenario where the UFC or another big spender buys Bellator, and he says no. My answer to that is based on our entire philosophy. It's one where fighters control their own destiny. The organization that puts this cage down and puts up the lights and puts all the cameras together and puts on their show on MTV has the same exact philosophy as the fighters who step in the cage. I'm a big fan of controlling one's own destiny. It's what got me to this point. It's the type of controlling your destiny that every organization is about. It's our very, very core. So that seems to me he's saying, nope, we're a mom-and-pop operation. That's all we're ever going to be, and I'm not interested in selling to a corporate entity. And what do you think about that?
I mean, that's his decision. I mean, you know, really, if that's the way somebody wants to handle their business, then, you know, I'm saying more power to them. You know, I think, you know, you get into that mindset where once you start taking on a promotion or once you start, you know, handling that, you've got to stick with whatever it is that you're comfortable doing. And, you know, maybe he doesn't want, you know, one of these big, massive things where he's got to, you know, constantly worry about finding new venues and getting bigger shows and signing more fighters and I think some promotions because of the people that run them, or maybe just because of the amount of time that the people running it can put into them, maybe they're just better off staying with an arena with an amount of fighters that they're comfortable with.
Right.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I do think though, and whether or not they say it or not, I think each and every owner and promoter probably keeps their mind open to the fact that, you know what, if the situation comes along, if I have the right time, if I have the right partners, if I have the right backing, maybe I can get bigger.
Right. I want to pause for a moment and bring on our partner in crime here. He is known as the man with the sexiest voice in 411 MMA radio. He is the one and only author of The Rear Naked Column. This is Sam McCarty.
I am perfection! Perfection! I am perfection! The day you had shot, give it all you got, bring it on!
That took me an hour to figure out what I was going to bring you on with.
For a second, I was wondering what the hell was going on, but I blame Larry for all the sexy voice thing. He's the one who started this whole thing. Nobody ever told me my voice was sexy before that. I would have liked had it been somebody, let's just say a female had said this for the first time as opposed to Larry, but he's the boss, you gotta take it.
Well, I have breaking news. My wife actually was the first person to tell me that your voice was sexy. She heard you on my show, and she's like, "Yeah, that's where the whole like, is he Dutch came from? That was where it was like, he's got a sexy voice. I bet he's Dutch." And I'm like, "Same Riccati. I'm fairly certain he's somewhere Middle Eastern." But she's like, "But listen to his voice, because she heard one of the old shows." And I'm like, "Yeah, he sounds kind of Dutch." And it turns out you're Canadian.
I thought he was. Yeah, I thought he was Cajun.
What's up, world there? Is Sam Riccati. No, but that was the whole. As soon as Larry started with he's got, because I was actually going to try to find. And I don't know if you're a wrestling fan or not. I was gonna try to find the Genius's old music. You know, Lanny Poffo. Since you are a resident MMA genius.
The Shawn Michaels music would have done.
I didn't even think
of
that.
Wow. Wow. He just went right there. That's good.
He did. But now you're stuck with Dolph Ziggler unless you just object across the board.
No, I'm fine.
Okay, because, damn it, I like Dolph Ziggler's theme music. Samer, what do you think of this Zuffa purchase? Do you think that this sort of henny penny, the sky is falling? And I want you, because you seem to be very knowledgeable on this subject. Everybody immediately went to the same joke, which was, oh, I bet they're going to continue to run Strikeforce shows just like they ran Pride shows, .. Oh, wait, never mind. Educate the people.
The thing is, there's not it was very surprising to hear. I mean, if anybody told you that, we heard some rumors, whatever, they're lying through their teeth. It was surprising. The key here is seeing how they're going to treat Strikeforce. Is it the way they treated the WEC or the way they treated Pride? Now, because Strikeforce has a contract with Showtime and many, many fighters, obviously, to go with that, I think it would be hard for the UFC to just, you know, dissolve Strikeforce right away the way they did with Pride and just, you know, start signing every fighter there. That's not how it works. And that's part of the reason why I was kind of surprised when Dana announced the merger with the WEC, because they had a deal with Versus, many fighters were under contract, and I didn't think it was possible for them to just say, oh, well, you guys are all UFC fighters now. There are contracts here, and things aren't that simple. How they put that one off, I'm not sure. But this deal, I'm fairly sure they're going to have to wait until the contract with Showtime, you know, just expires, or Showtime decides to throw this whole thing away or whatever. But for now, no, I don't think we'll be seeing Nick Diaz or Arthur Overeem or anybody under the UFC, no.
Let me ask you, do you think... I mean, and you spoke to this somewhat, but let us assume in 2 years, when everybody has to come back to the table again, and Showtime says, look, we like things as they are. We want to keep the Strikeforce brand intact as it is on Showtime, no changes. One, do you think that's likely? And two, do you think Zuffa goes ahead and says, this is fine. This business model works for us. We like the UFC is the pay-per-view model. Strikeforce is the subscription cable model. And let's not go ahead and muck things up. Or do you think that that's just fantasy and eventually we're going to get to one ring to rule them all?
Um, it, I wouldn't say it's likely. It's possible. It is feasible. The key here is that right now everything is in the hands of Zufa. Not right now. In 2 years, once the contract expires with Showtime, Zufa are going to be the one calling their shots. Whether Showtime decides to keep Strikeforce on, or whether if I'm Showtime, I would actually want the UFC to just merge the Strikeforce fighters and then pull off some deal with Zufa the way Versus did, where I'm able to broadcast some UFC events the way, you know, we just saw last week, UFC on Versus 3. Because, let's face it, the UFC is the household name. Showtime would gain much, much more from broadcasting UFC events, even if they aren't, you know, numbered UFC events, because those are always going to be on pay-per-view or on Spike. But whether the UFC wants to have three different deals with three different, you know, with Spike TV versus and Showtime, that's, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I think there are going to be some negotiations in store, but I think the UFC eventually in a couple of years, I think they'll see that, and I'm pretty sure they realize that already, and that's part of the reason why they decided to purchase Strikeforce to begin with. They know that. You know, Dana said it in the Ariel Helwani interview. He said, we need more fighters because we want more fights. Putting on more fights is part of what the UFC wants to do as they expand. And, you know, Dana talks about making the sport the biggest sport in the world, which is, you know, impossible, but credit for him for trying. I think eventually they're going to sign those huge Strikeforce names, you know, the Nick Diaz, the Astro Overeem, Fedor, I'm not sure with M1 and the entire deal. Whether they decide to keep Strikeforce and just run it, you know, as the way the WEC was run, I don't know. But I think in a couple of years, Strikeforce, as we know it right now, won't be a part of the MMA world.
Okay, so you feel like within the next couple of years, one way, shape, or form, Strikeforce will eventually be folded into the UFC. That's your prediction. And I think Scott had said the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to take a brief station break here. Just to let everyone know, I think due to the time change, there were some snafus here. We've got about 8 minutes of live show left, and then we're going to do a little bit more on this subject, and we're also going to preview the John Jones Shogun Hua fight that's happening Saturday. So that's all coming up in the next 20 minutes to half an hour in overtime. We are almost out of live time if you wanted to call in, because the stream will end, but the show will keep going for another 20 minutes or so. But before I do that, I wanted to go ahead and let everybody know that John Butterfield, is it? Is it? John Butterfield, our very own John Butterfield from 411mania.com in the MMA zone, will be interviewing Brendan Schaub this week before his fight with the legendary Mirko Krokop, who will both be fighting at this Saturday's UFC 128 Shogun War Hua versus Bones Jones. He'll be talking to him about his fights with Roy Nelson, John Madsen, James McSweeney, what he expected out of Gabriel Gonzaga, et cetera, what he thought of his time on The Ultimate Fighter. He's going to get into all of that, what he thinks of the top heavyweights outside of they aren't outside anymore, of the UFC. So be sure to tune into that, and I believe he'll have his interview up after by the end of the week. So be looking for that. All right, so I promised John I would do that for him. Okie dokie. So back to the situation at hand here. So I've been pretty positive on this whole thing. I think this is, at least in the short term, this is going to be great for Strikeforce. I think overall it's great for MMA. Now let's talk about the downside. And I think on the downside of this, there are some people who are concerned for the fighters, and I said, well, I wouldn't be too concerned for some of the fighters, given that, you know, the NFL is one single giant entity in football, and those guys do pretty well. However, let's talk about Paul Daly for a moment. Scott, you saw Paul Daly throw his gigantic temper tantrum on the on the internet. You know, he wants to take his ball and go home, presumably. Is he just showing out? Is he throwing a tantrum to get himself some attention, maybe trying to renegotiate for more money on this fight? You think he's legitimate? What do you make of Paul? And am I being unfair by calling it a big-ass temper tantrum?
Yeah, I mentioned this earlier. I think Paul Daly didn't bother watching that video. I don't think if he had watched that Ariel Helwani video, and granted, you know, that video is the PR release for this. Okay. You know, I'm kind of taking it at face value because we haven't gotten anything else. You know, I mean, we are less than, you know, 24 hours into this little issue, so we don't know. But I mean, I'm taking that PR video at face value. Paul Daly's situation was discussed. And Dana White just, you know, he said it plainly. He's never going to fight again for the UFC, but he can fight for Strikeforce. You know, Scott Coker has a relationship with Paul Daly. He has a contract with him. That contract's going to be honored. And that's it. I don't think Zuffo is going to bother will risk getting into a court battle by breaking contracts with these fighters. Paul Daly is a Strikeforce contracted fighter. I think Paul Daly is going to continue to fight for Strikeforce. Paul Daly might be listening to rumors, might be reading, you know, the headlines on the internet, and maybe perhaps jumping to conclusions, which, as strange as that may seem, I think sometimes people do that on the internet. And I think once his management or, you know, whoever his handlers are, once they talk to him and, you know, he, you know, touches base with Scott Coker and the other people at Strikeforce, I think he's going to realize, hey, look, you're still getting paid. You're still going to fight. Okay. Whoever happens to pull the strings 100, you know, levels above you, it's going to be unnoticeable at this point.
Right.
So, I mean, I think Paul Daly, I think Josh Barnett, I think all those guys are still going to have jobs. And when their contracts are up and they renegotiate and Scott Coker re-signs them, I think they will still continue to fight for Strikeforce so long as Strikeforce is an independent promotion.
Now, when they let's assume doomsday and they start to fold strike, they end the Strikeforce brand and they then bring the contracts into the UFC. Samer, who lives and who dies? Who do you think the UFC brings over from Strikeforce and makes them a UFC fighter, and who do they send home?
Out of any potential fighter fighting right now for Strikeforce?
Yeah. I mean, pick, you know, let's go with top five here. There you go. This is the new top five for the week. Top five guys that the UFC immediately brings over, and then the top five guys that they immediately send packing.
Oh, all right, gotcha. I think, first of all, it's Nick Diaz. I would put him above anybody else. Because I think the three biggest draws in Strikeforce are Fedor, but, you know, by then, who knows, he's already on a two-fight winning streak. In 2 years, who knows if he'll even be fighting, and then you have M1. So, you know, that's far from a done deal, even if Strikeforce folds. So I'll go with Nick Diaz, who's a big draw. His last fight with, you know, Mr. Cyborg produced solid ratings, and I think that's, you know, mainly attributed to Diaz. I would say Alistair Overeem. Dana White has a good relationship with him. He's expressed interest in signing him, and that was before this whole purchase thing. So Alistair Overeem, I would say Nick Diaz, and Jacare, as long as he's the middleweight champ, I think they'll bring him over. And then you got to look at the marketable guys. I guess Jason Mayhem Miller, maybe. Gilbert Melendez, obviously, because, you know, he's a UFC-caliber fighter. There's no doubt about that. I think he beats a lot of lightweights in the UFC. I don't think he becomes a champion, but he's got a chance. Those are the five I can think of off the top of my head.
Okay. We know Josh Barnett is never going to fight in the UFC. You know, he'll continue to fight for Strikeforce so long as it remains its own independent entity, but I would be willing to bet money that there will be no forgiveness on the part of Dana White with Josh Barnett.
And can I cut you right there?
What was that?
Can I cut you right there? If, in my opinion, if Josh Barnett wins the Grand Prix and becomes the Strikeforce heavyweight champion, he'll be in the UFC. I'm positive. If Tito Ortiz was brought back in the UFC and Dana claims, you know, they put all their problems to bed and whatever, they'll bring Josh Barnett back as long as he's worth it.
Okay,
I agree.
Scott, you think that Josh Barnett will find a way home?
You know, I think I need to be clear on something, and I think this is the most important thing. While Dana White has said, you know, there's 2 years on all these contracts before they start to make any other changes, I really think that if in 2 years, if Strikeforce can continue to operate on Showtime, and I think if Scott Coker can get Strikeforce back on CBS and the relationships where maybe even the talent exchanges where they, you know, do things with, you know, the guys in Dream, I think you will see Strikeforce stay on as a separate promotion, because if Scott Coker can go out and he can make those deals and he can make them happen and Strikeforce gets bigger under the Zuffa banner and Strikeforce starts bringing in more money, then at that point Zuffa will have expanded MMA into every possible corner of the marketplace and they wouldn't have had to do any more work. You know, they at that point, then they will have the network TV. They will have all, I mean, then they can say that Zuffa has all the best fighters in the world, bar none. So trying to bring them all under one, at that point it would just be a massive, you know, promotion called the UFC, I think would probably work against them. I think keeping, you know, I think if Strikeforce can stay a viable name, and I think if they can even get bigger, you know, and maybe with a little bit of, you know, Zuffa's guidance, they can get some better deals, a little bit more money, a little bit more, you know, ratings, I think you're going to see Strikeforce stay around. And I wouldn't be surprised if they stay around for quite a long time, because Strikeforce is a bigger name than WEC. WEC put on great shows, but not everybody got verses. And, you know, compared to, you know, WEC was a good name with a lot of good fighters, but I don't know that that was a bigger name than Strikeforce. You know, there's loads of opinions on that, but say by the time the Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix is finished, say the finale is on CBS, and say it's awesome, Strikeforce can easily be bigger than WCW was in the U.S. And I think off the strength of that, Zuffa would be foolish to fold the brand into the UFC. They would have had everything that they wanted as far as, you know, having promotions and being able to put fighters in here and there. It would be foolish to then end that all and say, okay, you know what, we're going to fold all you guys in under the UFC umbrella, and now we've got to recreate these connections with Showtime, you know. Scott Coker has those connections. Let him manage them. Let him do that work. That's what they're paying him for.
Right.
I think
Scott Coker apparently
if they do that, it'll be perfect.
Scott Coker is big in Japan, and I don't mean to pun in reference to the song there, but apparently Scott Coker's big claim to fame was, you know, K1 kickboxing, and he apparently knows how to do business in Japan. And from what I understand, he's actually pretty more accepted and better at it than Dana White and those in Zuffa. So I think. I think you bring up a lot of good points, and one of the things that they can use Scott Coker for, I mean, let's assume you're right but you're wrong in that that Strikeforce ends up becoming the wing that inevitably becomes, you know, UFC International. And so when they inevitably fold Strikeforce into the UFC, they'll still have a guy who has the ability has been running that wing, that promotion. But they send him out to do the international deals. They send him out to just focus on the international shows. And that's one guy doing that and one guy focusing on the national shows, et cetera. I think that's a great use for Scott Coker. So building on what you're saying, is that if he's able to, with some of the executives from Zuffa, pick up this brand and really, you know, send it into the stratosphere, he then repositions himself as, I'm the international guy. You know, UFC opened up an office in China, and I remember I was reading about it, and one of the things that they wanted somebody to run it who lives in China, works in China, knows that business, because what they're finding is that they need somebody who, you know, not just with international business experience, but really somebody who knows the marketplace in order to expand in these areas. And it kind of takes us back to where we were at the beginning of the show, where a guest, John Brodigan, was talking about lobbying to get mixed martial arts legalized in New York, where the biggest trip and fall for the UFC was they just don't know how to navigate internal New York State politics. There's a comparison there to the international business field, which Scott Coker talked about in dealing with MMA in Japan, where there's a lot of pitfalls, and sometimes the Japanese businessmen just don't want to do business with you for any number of reasons. So it's good to have a guy there with the established relationships who knows how to do business.
Oh, yeah.
Samer, I'm going to bring you back into the discussion here. When you first saw the... ultimately, what happens going forward here? You saw the news item, you saw the video, you saw the knee-jerk reactions to it. You've had some time to digest it. You've talked a little bit about it, but you know, I'm gonna just toss you the microphone and you tell us ultimately where do you think this goes from here?
I think Scott touched on something important in that. We're only 24 hours removed from the news. And it would be disingenuous to sit here and act as though, you know, we know everything. We're just speculating.
Right.
I think we will all find out more once the UFC holds more press conferences. They already announced a press conference about this where they're going to take questions and whatnot. I think this will be more telling. I think more importantly, time will be more telling because for now, Dana's going to keep repeating the business as usual thing. What I think would happen in the future, I understand Scott's point in that if Zuffa manages to you know, take Strikeforce to another level, which I'm sure I wouldn't say they're bound to do, but I'm sure they're going to make some improvements, whether it's production value, lack of boneheaded decisions, like going to Japan, obviously that's out of the window now, but... or whatever. I'm pretty sure on the production side, on the direction side, as a whole, Strikeforce is going to improve under Zuffa's guidance. But even if, let's say, Scott's scenario unfolds and, you know, the Grand Prix finale is just awesome. On CBS, big fight, you know, like a Stephen Bonner, Forrest Griffin type of, you know, fight. Let's say the final takes place between, I don't know, Alistair Overeem and, let's just say, Sergei Kharitonov. Wouldn't the UFC be smart to bring them in once this whole thing is over? Maybe they would be foolish not to keep Strikeforce, but on the other hand, you got to look at it this way. If Nick Diaz continues to have a lot of success, Alistair Overeem, Gilbert Melendez, Dana White is going to want those fighters in the UFC because he's going to claim, and he'd be right, that, oh, fans want to see Alistair Overeem against Cain Velasquez, Gilbert Melendez against Frankie Edgar, or whoever is going to be the champion by then. They're going to bring them in. And once they do, even if Strikeforce by that time has reached, you know, a whole different level, it's not going to last because they'd be losing their top fighters. And that is why I don't see Strikeforce sticking around in 2 years, even if they're highly successful. That's the thing. Yes, they're already bigger than the WEC. There's no doubt about that. They're making money. One of the most common misconceptions before this whole thing happened was that Strikeforce was losing money. They weren't. They just weren't making that much profit. But they were. They were making money. And under Zuffa, they're going to keep doing that, obviously. But I don't see the benefits of keeping those fighters there in 2-3 years, as long as they can bring them into the UFC. And there's an important point about Scott Coker. If Strikeforce folds, Dana White is going to keep him the same way he kept Reed Harris and Sean Shelby once they brought the WC in. It's in his best interest of keeping him because Scott Coker already has a good relationship with a lot of the fighters. He knows his stuff. He's got, as you guys mentioned, he's got some international connections. He's going to keep him. And so essentially, it's almost the same thing. Zuffa was putting on more shows. It's just under the UFC banner as opposed to, you know, Strikeforce and UFC, or as it was a year ago, UFC and WEC. So I don't think it's going to make a lot of difference, because ultimately the money is inside the UFC. If Alistair Overeem gets big in North America, he could be a lot bigger in the UFC. Even if Zuffa now owns Strikeforce, the name UFC is ultimately the biggest name in MMA. And bringing Alistair Overeem in would make him an even bigger star. The same way we're going to see Uriah Faber become a bigger star now, and Jose Aldo become a bigger star now. So that's why I don't see Strikeforce sticking around for long, because once the UFC starts grouping their biggest stars with the Ultimate Fighting Championship, I think then and there Strikeforce, you know, isn't going to hold the same name value. They can't put on the same quality, fight quality. That's why I think we're looking at 2-3 years tops before we see the Strikeforce fighters merge with the UFC.
So let me ask you this. They asked Evan Kajani, who runs M1 Global, how this affects him. And he immediately said, Fedor's contract is with Showtime. Our contract is with Showtime. It doesn't affect us. Blowing smoke, Samer, or do you think or do you think this absolutely will affect whatever M1's plan is going into the future with running events in North America? And really, let's extend that out to, they were the first ones I thought of because they were the closest ones to it. But do the smaller national promotion, rather regional, but professional promotions, that, for example, the three that I talked about earlier that are on HDNet, do they lose in this scenario, or are they going to win in this scenario, in the sense of this gives them an opportunity now to fill a role that Strikeforce was in?
I don't think they get that far, regional promotions, that is. I don't think they're going to reach the Strikeforce level. I think promotions like Bellator, for example, might benefit somewhat, because if you're showing your walking papers from Strikeforce, you have nowhere to go, basically. You're not going to get signed with the UFC because, well, they're owned by the same company. I mean, I guess if you get released by the UFC, you can get signed with Strikeforce, but still, we're splitting hairs here. I guess, like, Bellator could snatch up some of those names. Looking at M1... I think short term, yeah, it's not going to affect much. Their contract is still with Showtime. Dana White said Scott Coker is going to be the one dealing with this. I mean, yeah, in terms of Fedor and those fighters, yeah, I think Scott Coker is going to be doing the business. I don't buy Dana's claim that it's just, you know, totally business as usual. I'm sure he's going to interfere in some stuff, but not the Fedor stuff. He's already expressed his disdain for dealing with the quote unquote those crazy Russians. I don't think he wants to start now. Short term, I don't think it affects much, but long term, yeah, absolutely. I think M1 is done. At least
really?
their plan.
You think M1 is? You don't think after their deal concludes with Showtime, they'll get renewed? You think they'll get kicked off the network?
That's the thing. It depends on when it does conclude with Showtime. If it does in a year, yeah, Showtime can renegotiate, I guess. If they feel, but that's the thing, by then, first of all, we have to keep in account that M1 would have lost a lot of negotiating power, because Fedor isn't the same name that he was at this time a year ago.
Okay.
And if they want to keep insisting on co-promoting, will Zuffa allow that? I mean, that's the thing. If in 2 years Fedor's deal is up, yeah, that's done. M1 would want to co-promote, but by that time there would be absolutely no reason to do that, because, and I'm sorry to say, Fedor is not going to be worth it anymore. I don't think he was worth co-promoting with the UFC to begin with, not doubting his fighting ability, just, you know, who he is as a fighter, and as a name, I mean. And by then, yeah, I think if M1 insists on co-promoting, then, yeah, I don't see that ending well for them. If not, if somehow they're more lenient, they're less demanding, I'm sure Dana White would still like to have Fedor in the UFC. I think he'll be there. But as far as M1 as a brand and putting on shows in North America, yeah, I'm not sure how that works out for them.
That actually leads me to a question I wanted to throw at Scott. And it's kind of related to this. It was a news item that broke the other day before all of this, sort of two-part question for you, and that is, one, do you want to see Dan Henderson fight Fedor? And if so, you think the UFC then finagles that match out of Strikeforce and makes that a UFC fight?
Okay, well, question number one, do I want to see Dan Henderson fight Fedor? I think that would be a really good fight. I mean, as a fan, I would love to see it. If I was somebody in Fedor's camp, I wouldn't book that fight. My point being is that, well, Fedor is a heavyweight. He's always competed as a heavyweight. He is now on a two-fight losing streak, okay? And while a two-fight losing streak isn't a big deal when you were considered the, you know, greatest, I mean, we're talking about a guy who is typically considered by many people greatest fighter of all time. You're on a two-fight losing streak. You go and you fight a guy who, you know, is a light heavyweight, but also is a middleweight. If Fedor loses, his stock at that point now plummets dramatically. Doesn't matter that Dan Henderson is a legend and all that. You know, the casual fans, the people that buy, 80% of the product, now see this guy who was, you know, being touted as the greatest of all time, has now lost to somebody that really, you know, can fight at 185. So it's a very bad matchup for Fedor. Even if he wins, he beats a guy that was smaller than him anyways. You know, he beats a guy that was, you know, probably better as a middleweight, is kind of a small light heavyweight, and, you know, the fight isn't going to happen at light heavyweight. I mean, a lot of people think that, but I honestly think that it's probably going to happen at a heavyweight where Dan Henderson will be about 210 pounds, you know, and Fedor will be at his normal about 230, 235. If Dan Henderson, for some reason, is able to, you know, stop Fedor, you know, lands that big right hand and finishes him on the ground, how do they book Fedor next? I mean, who do you put him up against? You know, that would just not be a great show. As a fan, I would love to watch it. I think that would be a great fight. You know, back in Pride, I always thought one of the great mega fights they could have done was Wanderlei Silva against Fedor. I thought, wow, you know, just two, you know, guys, especially when Wanderlei was on his undefeated streak for all that time and was just running through everybody and no one wanted to fight him. I thought, oh, perfect fight. Now, Dan Henderson, that would be a great fight. But if I was in Fedor's camp, I wouldn't book that fight. It's too dangerous. If he loses, you've got nowhere else to go with the guy. So,
okay. Well,
his camp's
on vodka and on drugs, and they, you know, and they don't really care about him. And they say, you know, and they're offered $1 billion to do this fight.
I don't think it's a smart fight for him. Even if he doesn't look good, you know, it puts him in a tough negotiation. Do I think the UFC would take that fight from Strikeforce and put it on? No, I don't think they would. I mean,
no finagling.
No, I don't think they would finagle it because I think in order for that fight to happen, it's going to have to happen within the next year. And I honestly think, for the most part, we're not going to see a lot of. I don't think you're going to see the UFC get hands on with Strikeforce very much for at least 2 years. So, I mean, that's just my point of view. As a fan, I'd love to watch it. But if I was the guy who was charting, you know, the rest of Fedor's career, I wouldn't touch that fight at all.
I'm going to switch it up a little bit, and then I want to move into UFC 128 before we end the show for the day. Samer, similar question, only let's take Dan Henderson out and we'll throw Randy Couture in there. Does the UFC do that fight while they have the opportunity with Fedor on the Showtime contract or not? And again, if so, do they do it under the UFC banner, or do they send Randy Couture over to Strikeforce to do it?
Well, I'm not sure. I guess they have the opportunity, but Errol Hawani asked Dana White something along those lines. I'm not sure that was the matchup he threw, but it was a UFC signed fighter against a Strikeforce signed fighter, and Dana White said, even if we both, Zuffa owns both companies, we don't co-promote. And that's the thing. If that fight is going to happen, it's going to happen either in the UFC or Strikeforce, and either way, you're looking at basically co-promoting, especially with Fedor involved, because there's M1 too.
And M1 has made it clear that every fatal fight has to be co-promoted. So you not only have Strikeforce and Showtime, but you have M1, and they've been hell to deal with for all these years, and I don't think that's going to change now. The chances of that fight happening because of that are highly unlikely. Whether it's Fedor Couture or Fedor anybody under the UFC banner, Fedor Anderson, yeah, it could happen. I totally agree with points. I don't think Fedor's people should take it. But if we're looking at Fedor Couture, first of all, I'm not sure it's worth it. The fight, you know, both are past their primes. Couture is on a 3-fight winning streak, I guess. But, you know, look at his last 3 opponents. And do people really want to see that? I'm not sure. I guess they would want to, but nobody's going to be clamoring for that. Nobody's going to be asking the UFC to just, you know, co-promote and make that fight happen. Are they going to put it on pay-per-view? If it happens under the UFC banner, I guess they would put it on pay-per-view. But how many buys will that do? Is it worth it? Like, let's say it does 700,000 buys, which is good. The UFC can do that with any George St. Pierre fight. Brock Lesnar and Junior Dos Santos is going to break that, probably, especially coming off the Tough Show. There are plenty of big fights for the UFC to put on, especially right now, where I don't think they're desperate for those kind of super fights.
Okay. I throw that out there, and I understand that they aren't co-promoting, and I actually agree with them. I don't think their long-standing practice has been no brand confusion, no co-promoting. I'm not sure how things worked with. I would assume that would be one of those sticking points when they bought Strikeforce, you know, and they said, you know, all contracts will be honored. That Strikeforce will continue to co-promote with M1, and that's part of the reason why they don't want to. I think you're right with that. But when I said send Randy Couture over, they would be literally like on paper, he's now a Strikeforce fighter for the purposes of this fight, and it's a one fight deal kind of a thing. That was sort
but
of where
there are
my head
contracts
was at.
And store. It's not that simple. The thing is, it's not that simple because Randy Couture has a UFC contract. He probably has a pay-per-view clause too, where he gets some of the pay-per-view revenue. It's too complicated an issue. I'm sure they can work it out somehow, but I'm not sure the juice is worth the squeeze.
Right. What I hear you saying is, look, even if they had all the right pieces and could put them together in a pretty little picture, it might not even be worth it to do that sort of thing. And I guess that's a fair point. I'm actually a little surprised to hear you say that you don't think there'd be a lot of interest in the Fedor versus Randy Couture, but that might speak to the generational shift in viewership. If we were talking, you know, 5 years ago, and you know, it's mostly people who followed Pride, I think we'd be having a different conversation, but you're right. This is a new generation of fans, and we're lucky if they can actually understand what jiu-jitsu is, let alone want to see those two go at it. Fair point. Scott, last words on this? Anything that, you know, that just jumped out at you that you feel like we didn't cover?
No. But, you know, I look at the situation with a lot of optimism. I think, you know, to quote Jim Ross, I think business is about to pick up.
Like I said, I am poly-positive on this. I think it's nothing but up for Strikeforce now that they have competent executives running the marketing, promotions, and I keep calling it logistics, but just running the damn brand. You know, let Scott Coker do what he does, and you know, and all the and all the stuff, you know, all the nitty-gritty work that nobody gets any credit for, but is super important, will actually be done by, you know, by competent people, and I think that's nothing but positive for this. Same thing. Anything that we, you know, anything that's particularly negative about this that we've just missed? Are we glossing over it in any way? Or, you know, are you just like, we feel like we've really covered this as best we could?
I wouldn't say it's all roses and flowers. Of course, there are going to be some negative aspects, but I think they're fairly minute compared to the big pictures.
Right.
I get a big picture. I think, yeah, you look at guys who are, you know, not Dana White's favorite fighters, whether it's even not fighters, even like guys like Pat Miletich and Frank Shamrock. We're still talking about 2, 3, 4, 5 individuals. It's unfortunate for them, sure, but you got to look at the big picture here. I think it's fairly positive on the whole.
Okay. All right. This Saturday, there is UFC 128, and we don't have time to get into the entire card, but let's talk about the big deal the headliner, the main event, Shogun, War, Hooah. Gotta say it like the commenters do. Versus Johnny Bones Jones, the Rocky of our generation. Scott, how do you see this fight breaking down? What is your 10-cent analysis?
I think Jones is going to. I think he's going to be an incredibly tough fighter for Shogun. I think his range is going to be something that Shogun's going to. I think Shogun's going to have to resort to a lot of leg kicks, things like that, to try to, you know, really do any type of striking. But I think Jones's range and I think his speed and athleticism is going to be too much. It wouldn't surprise me to see him get Shogun down and honestly, a first round TKO or submission wouldn't surprise me. Probably John Jones. If it goes to the second, Shogun could surprise us. Great fighter, but you know what? I look at what Jones did to Ryan Bader, and while I don't, equate Ryan Bader to Shogun, Jones went and just demolished Bader where Bader was strongest in all the areas, and I don't think really anybody saw it unfolding like that, and he made it look very simple. He went in there, had a game plan, did it. Beat Bader, out-wrestled him, was stronger than him. And I honestly think that he's going to go in there, and I think when he wants to take Shogun down, he's going to take him down. And I think when he wants to pass his guard and when he wants to really beat on him, I think he's going to. And he'll, first or second round, he's going to either finish it with strikes or with a submission.
Samer, is John Bones the new prodigy, or has he just got the rocket strapped to him and he's just going to blow up on in this match? Do you think... too much, too fast here, or we're looking at the next great mixed martial artist?
I'm really glad you asked that. I think either way, we're looking at a 50-50 proposition, or maybe 55-45 in terms of Jones. I slightly favor Jones. But either way, whether he loses or wins, I think he's the next prodigy. He's still 23 years old. If he loses to Shogun, big deal. You know what I mean? It might be too fast too soon, but I think the matchup kind of favors him because Shogun has never had great takedown defense, and Jones just is going to throw him to the ground. I think Shogun offers a far, far, far more versatile and dangerous game off of his bag than Bader. And Jones might be troubled there. But either way, win or lose, I think Jones is the next big thing. I think he'll win the title in his career. I'm sure we said that a lot about a lot of fighters, but you can recognize special talent when you see it. And John Jones is a special talent. Does he beat Shogun? I would favor him. But even if he doesn't, I'm just hoping if he loses, people will, refrain from the, he's overrated, Zuffa hype, whatever, because
they don't read the news articles. I think you're asking a lot of our readers.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's the thing in MMA, because everything is so radical. You can't just lose because the other guy was better on the day or just better as a whole. No. You're either overrated or you're going to reign that division for a long time the way Lyoto Machida did. There's no middle ground.
Yes, everybody is Brock Lesnar. You're the worst thing that ever happened to MMA, and you should be killed on contact. Or you are the undisputed king, and there has been nobody like you ever in the history of sports. It's a bit bipolar, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But that's the nature of MMA fans.
I think it's the nature of a lot of fans, regardless of the actual sport. Shogun loses, right? If Shogun loses... last year he was out with the, correct me if I've got my timeline wrong, but he loses the title to Machida, he gets a rematch, and then immediately goes out for several months with a knee injury and subsequent surgery. He's coming back, and immediately he's in a title defense with possibly the next great MMA fighter. If he loses, what's next for Shogun, Samer? Where does Shogun go from here?
I think the good thing about the light heavyweight division is that there's no shortage of great fighters. I think it's appropriate to have him fight, say, a rematch with Forrest Griffin, for example, who beat him on Shogun's UFC debut, but there's been a lot of talk since then that, oh, Shogun wasn't healthy for that fight, and, you know, his cardio suffered. I think a rematch there would be appropriate. Maybe if Quinn Jackson loses to Matt Hamill, that would be another fight. Randy Couture, if he wins against Machida and they don't want to give him an immediate title shot, I mean, that division is so deep you can make any fight happen virtually.
What I think I hear you saying is that even if Shogun doesn't sniff another title shot, he's still a marketable enough fighter, and so long as he wants to fight, there's plenty of fights for him that are fascinating and will put butts in seats.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. Scott, I got kind of a zinger for you, and then I think we're gonna call it a day. There's a lot of talk about guys jumping weight classes. You know, this one's cleaned out this division, or I don't know if you think you know where I'm going with this, but something I've been thinking about recently, and that is, we're talking about sort of crowning the next great MMA fighter in Jon Jones, but I think, and I didn't even participate in this week's coming pound-for-pound rankings because I haven't had time, but I, without even looking at it, I'm assuming everyone put at the top Anderson Silva, if not GSP, and my belief is that the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world is Anderson Silva, and that's not being a huge fan of his, that's being able to analyze talent. So he's currently at middleweight, and I've always felt like he would be more challenged and maybe better suited as a light heavyweight. Let's assume for a moment I'm right about that. Do you think that there's money in the bank for UFC to, regardless of what happens with GSP and Anderson Silva, to bump Anderson Silva into light heavyweight and to get those two in the octagon in either by the end of this year, if not next year?
Well, I think from the UFC standpoint, there's money to be made with Anderson Silva with just about any fight. You know, with anybody that poses a credible challenge to him. The problem is going to be getting to Anderson Silva to take those fights. You know, I think Anderson himself views himself kind of coming towards the end of his career. That's the way he's kind of spoken. When the question's been posed to him about, you know, because they asked him, you know, they said, hey, you've competed before, you know, 170, actually 168 in Japan. Why not just go down and fight, you know, George St. Pierre? Why not go up and fight, you know, and try to take the light heavyweight title? Why not do these things? You know, you most certainly get title shots. He said that he thought it would be presumptuous of him to do that, you know, just to change weight classes to try to take other people's titles. So would he move up to light heavyweight? I mean, I think they'd have to make the deal sweet enough for him to do. Would Jon Jones against Anderson Silva be a tremendous bout? Well, yeah, if Jon Jones beats Shogun, there's already people online talking about it. You know, it's almost like, you know, GSP who? They want to see Anderson Silva fight Jon Jones. Well, let's say GSP and Anderson Silva fight, and GSP wins. I can guarantee you the next major fight they're going to want to see is GSP fight Jon Jones. So, I mean, you know, is there some mileage? You know, is there, you know, would it be a good idea to have Anderson Silva move up to light heavyweight? Sure. Would he? You know, he's never really indicated that's something that he wants to do full time. He enjoys the middleweight division. I'm sure he probably feels that that's where he fights the best at, you know, which is why he wants to stay there. So, you know, would there be a lot of great fights? Yeah, of course. I mean, just about any fight that you put Anderson Silva in has the potential to be a great fight. Do I think they'll be able to do it? It's a big question mark. I mean, I think they'd really have to sweeten the pot for him to get him to do it.
Okay. It's definitely the fight that I want to see. I know everyone wants to see Anderson Silva versus GSP. If you say, Mark, do you want to see this fight? Meh. You know, sure, I guess. I'm in the camp that would rather see Anderson Silva versus Jon Jones. Samer, Jon Jones wins. Who's he fight next? Who does he defend the title against?
If Rampage beats Matt Hamill, I think we're looking at that fight. Otherwise, they're going to have to do a whole lot of convincing to make Jon Jones against Rashad Evans. recently.
We were talking earlier. I want to throw this in there because we were talking earlier in the discussion about MMA. If they're successful in getting MMA sanctioned in New York, do you not think that John Jones versus Rashad Evans in New York is the fight to make? And they're warming up to doing it. So, you know, do you not think that would be the time, the place? You know, everything's kind of rolled into a nice, neat package. You know, at Jones versus Evans, Madison Square Garden.
Right. I think they'd both be foolish to turn it down. I think they both kind of changed their stance about the fight. They said, Jones recently said, well, yeah, if we absolutely have to, if it's a big money fight, we don't want to get fired over this. I doubt they'd get fired, by the way, but he was just saying that. I think they'd take it, especially if it's in New York, a huge fight. You'd be foolish to turn it down. The real question is the time frame, because if Jones wins, does Rashad Evans sit out another 6 months waiting to take a fight and, you know, fight for the title when the last fight he's had before that was like 18 months ago against Rampage? By that time, it would be 18 months ago. That's a tricky proposition. I think Rashad will want a fight first. And, you know, in that division, any fight is potentially dangerous. So that's why I think it's kind of tricky, because I think Rashad Evans will have to fight soon, no matter what, win or lose. Even if Shogun wins and he's next in line, is he going to wait for Shogun 5-6 months? I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, for the UFC to really to come up with a contender for Jones, presuming he wins the title, they've got a tricky just based on time. They've got a lot of issues they're going to have to resolve, because you've got a possibility in Lyoto Machida versus John Bones as the next matchup, but then Lyoto Machida has to be Randy Couture. Which event is that happening at? Is that the one with GSP and Shields?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 129 in Toronto.
Okay, so that's doable. As far as timing goes, that's doable if he does it. And I actually don't think it's a bad first title defense for Jones. If they want to wait another month, they've got Rampage and Matt Hamill, but that's, again, assuming Rampage doesn't pull a boner and not, you know, and lose against Matt Hamill. So, you know, they've almost gotten themselves in sort of a strike force situation where they're hoping the dominoes all fall the way that they're supposed to. Guys, I think this was a great discussion. I'm really looking forward to being able to recap UFC 128 a week from today, after the event, and then we'll start looking at what's headed, you know, I think the following week after that, we've got Friday night coverage for Titan Fighting Championship, the return of the great Bobby Lashley, not so great, and of course the debut of M1 Global, and then of course there's Bellator on Saturday night. So we've got a lot of good stuff lined up. I want to thank you guys for being on the show. By the way, what kept you? Where were you? We missed you. It was 11:30, and there was nobody, and I babbled to myself for at least a good 20 minutes. What happened? Daylight savings time screw you up?
The time shift really screwed me up.
Hey, okay, that's what I figured. I figured when you guys came on and I saw you chatting in the chat room, I was just like, I'm the only one that set my clock.
Well, no, I set my clock. We were starting at 11:30, correct?
The show started at 11. I was saying that we were going to start the segment at 11:30.
Yeah, well, I called in at 11:30, didn't I?
Did you? No.
No.
It was later than that.
Oh, okay.
I stared at that. I stared at my board for just praying to God you guys were going to come on, you know, so that we could get the discussion going. And I'm like, well, it's a good thing I've really talked this to death in my own head.
Well, I thought it'd been on longer than that, because it's only 12. I only got 12:07 right now, so.
Not a problem. I'm teasing. Listen, if there's one thing I know how to do, and I think you guys have both figured this out by now, and that is I know how to ramble. I can go, man. But if you need me to talk for just hours on end without stopping, I can do that for you. That's my talent.
Well, good to know. Good to know.
I'm hoping someday you guys get my sense of humor.
Oh, I can
no,
get it.
It's not. We do. It's just I'm pretty sure this is not this, but the fact that we were late is going to come off as really amateurish. But whatever, it's only our first show, man. Cut us some slack. Not you, the listeners.
You know what, Samer? I've been doing this stuff on Blog Talk Radio now for so long, and we've had so many technical difficulties, you know, or guests not calling in. And believe me, this is about the most professional we've ever sounded. And the fact that you guys came on when you did, believe me, this is not the worst thing I've ever had to deal with. So, you know, if anyone thinks that this is unprofessional, I suggest you sign up for Blog Talk Radio yourself and give it a whirl, because it ain't as easy as you think. With that said, I okay, apparently this is a basketball game on that my wife's really into. It's what? So the SEC Championship's on, and my wife is cheering her Gators on. So I guess, with that said, thank you for joining us on the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show. We will be back at 11 a.m. sharp next Sunday, the 19th of March. Samer, thank you for being on. Scott, thank you for being on. See you guys on the boards.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Bye, man.
At Moss Nissan, we're not just in the business of selling cars, we're in the business of building relationships. Whether you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle, looking to sell your current vehicle, or in need of service, Moss Nissan is here to provide you with all the information you need to make an informed decision, one that works for your individual situation and needs. At Moss Nissan, we want to be your car dealer for life. Stop in today and experience the Moss difference. Moss Nissan, whatever it takes.
Your perfect closet starts with the right finishing touches. And right now, during the Lighting and Accessories event at California Closets, every $1,500 of designed lighting and accessories earns you $500 towards your custom design. Garage, office, bedroom, California Closets will give you a space that's fresh, styled, and expertly organized. To get started, visit one of our three conveniently located showrooms or visit CaliforniaClosetsTampaBay.com to book your free design consultation today.